This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Stacey Westfall from Ohio.
And you're listening to the first monthly Stacey Westfall episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October the 1st. This episode is brought to you by Equithrive. Good morning, horse world. Well, I am so excited, everybody, to bring you a friend of mine for a number of years. Actually, I've been trying to talk her into doing this for a number of years. We have Stacey Westfall with us, and she's going to be here the first Tuesday of every month. Hi, Stacey.
Hi, Glenn, and everybody listening.
And you know Stacey. She's one of the she's been on our shows many, many times. If you don't know who Stacey is, you've probably been under a rock or haven't had horses for very long. Just look her up, and you'll see a million videos and a million awards, and she's won everything, and she's a world champion. And if I went through your credits, we would be here the entire show, and we'd say goodbye.
You're too kind.
You also can find Stacey on Facebook. She has a very active Facebook page. Just search for Stacey Westfall. And that's Stacey without an E, S-T-A-C-Y. Now, Stacey, you're joining us here once a month. We're going to do listener questions. We're going to have a call-in segment where people can call in, which makes this episode a little different than the others. And you also have a podcast where you address a lot of things in great detail, right?
I do. I started one, and geez, you know, I've been talking about this for years because I talked to you about it a long time ago. Yeah. And I briefly started one about, you know, close to 10 years ago. I think maybe 8 or something like that. But I didn't make it. What do you call it? I pod faded. So I had to have that experience in life. So now that I've done that, I've been back in. I'm up in the 40s now for my episodes. So yay.
What's it called?
Stacey Westfall Horse Podcast.
I like titles that say what it is. That's perfect.
I was kind of going with that. I had had, I was like, let's go with simple. So, the same reason why I'm kind of a little all over the place with the stuff that I do with my horses. Really, if you look at what I do, even competing wise or anything, I jump around the board a lot, and it was going to be hard to title it one specific thing because I might be doing reining or colt starting or dressage or Western dressage or mounted shooting or driving minis or trail riding. And how can you make a title out of that? Can you do that for me?
I want to see a video of you driving a mini. I think that would be hilarious.
I can totally. Listen to this. I got two minis that were unhalter broke at one point, and actually it was after I had lost Roxy and Vaquero, both of my really two of my really famous horses, within a couple months of each other. And I was really depressed about going out to the barn. Like, I just really felt like I'd just been kicked. And my son had been wanting to get a mini to train and sell. So we were looking for a mini for him, and we came across these two half siblings to each other, and they were like these little terrors. They were like very wild, sassy little minis. And I told my husband, I want to buy these minis for therapy minis. And he said, you're going to get into therapy? I said, no, my therapy. Like, they make me laugh. Like, this little one stands on her hind legs and she's striking at me and she's like eye level. And for some reason, I'm finding this very humorous right now. And so I bought them, and then I just started training them just like any other horse. And when my vet came a few months later to give spring shots, he was like, oh, minis. And the first one stood like a champ, and he was like, what have you done to this mini? And I'm like, I've just been training it. And the next one stood, and he was like, it's a fluke. And the third one stood because my son had gotten one, and he was like, what are you guys doing? And I had so much fun training those minis. And Glenn, you'd crack up. I went to an Amish store, got my first harness, and I said, make sure I can hook him double someday. And so he's like trying to explain to me like how everything goes, and then I go
it's
back.
It's hard enough to figure out a single harness, yeah. let alone a double. Yeah.
So I figure out the single, and I get them each individually trained, and then I go back and I'm like, okay, I need a second harness, and can you show me how to hook it up? And he's got the harness laid over one of those like plastic foal,
oh, yeah.
you know, blanket demo thing. And he's like got all these lines crossed. And like, I know I leave and I know he's like, this crazy English lady is going to get herself killed. And I went to Road to the Horse that year and Guy McLean was there. And I'm showing him this video of me driving my Mini around my indoor. And all he can look at and laugh at is my winter hat. I have the cutest video of me like trotting around with this little team and I am so happy. And it's like February, it's freezing cold and they're all little fluff balls. And all he can talk about is like how ugly my hat is. you're missing the point, Guy. Look at the Minis. I will definitely get you
video. I can
video.
See Guy doing that.
It was funny.
I was actually trying to remember where we met for the first time and I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure either.
It's been
either.
A long time, so I have no idea. I almost Road to the Horse, I don't think. It was earlier than that. You were on our show earlier.
Yeah, it was earlier, and I almost want to say maybe it was like virtual like this.
Yeah,
and
it must have been. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, so we're going to, as I said, we're going to be doing this once a month, and because we're not doing this live, Stacey has a lot of things she's doing with travel and shows and things, we're going to announce on Facebook, on her Facebook page and ours, when the call-ins are to call in and ask questions. And we actually did that, so you'll hear some of those later in the show today. Plus, we have some listener-submitted questions that Stacey's going to tackle. And we have a special guest by the name of Ginny Talago.
Talago.
Yep. And she's going to talk about equine experiential learning, which I couldn't even spell. So I'm going to learn something today, too. So that's all coming up on today's show. But first, we are brought to you by Equithrive.
Did you know that horses with limited access to pasture also have limited access to vitamin E? Vitamin E plays an important role in the function of your horse's muscles and nerves. Plus, it's also an antioxidant. Horses in training, aging horses, and horses that are recovering from certain health issues often require even more. I recently had a blood test run on 4 of my horses, and the 3 that are in training all tested low for vitamin E. Now I am supplementing them with a pelleted, natural vitamin E from Equithrive. To learn more about vitamin E and Equithrive's products, please visit equithrive.com.
We have a question, Stacy, that was submitted by Janelle. She says, hey, Stacy, I'm a novice rider. I've ridden for about 15 years, but by no means am I a professional. None of us ever are. Mm-hmm. I've always heard the phrase, ruin a horse. What are ways to prevent ruining a horse, such as using heavy hands or creating bad habits? Mm-hmm. That is kind of a general term that's used for anything that you do wrong with a horse.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's a general term. And the first thing that I would do if I were trying to answer this question for myself is I literally just start writing down my version of ruining a horse. So I think where the gray area comes in is that it has a lot of opinion mixed in with it. And so with a lot of opinion mixed in with it, you basically just have to figure out where you stand on it. So in general, I think that the phrase ruining a horse just kind of strikes fear into people about, you know, what they could do wrong. But now you really have to start getting clear about what you want to achieve. So basically flip this around into a positive version. So instead of looking at like, you know, am I going to ruin my horse? Think, what do I want to achieve with my horse? So for me, I want a horse that is safe for people to be around. I want it to be easy to lead. I want it to be something that if it is a horse that I started out with the goal of reining, if it quote unquote fails out of reining, which is a phrase I don't personally use, but you'll hear it out there. It's very similar to ruining a horse. My thought is if a horse quote unquote fails out of reining, it better be a real good 4-H horse and trail horse. Because during the training, you shouldn't be pushing a horse to the point where it's going to be intimidated or physically damaged due to something you're doing. So in my world, I want a horse that's going to be quiet, easy to handle, and then I'm going to see how much athletic ability it has to see if I can take it up to a higher level in something, like whether that's Western dressage or reining or whatever. But I don't ever want to push them mentally or physically past a breaking point. And so I think as you're exploring this, Janelle, what you need to do is write down what you admire when you look at horses out there and aim for kind of the positive version of like, what do I want to achieve? And then you'll start to find like, oh, I want to achieve this with my horse, but oh, wait a minute, I'm not willing to use that technique I saw over there on YouTube.
Well, I think too, can I throw my two cents in here?
Oh, sure.
I think too, you know, I hate the failing out of. That just means your horse doesn't want to do that job. Mm-hmm. And we find that horses want to do certain jobs and are good at certain jobs and not good at others, just like we are, right? So I think we get this headset that I'm going to make this horse do this job, whether it's the job the horse should be doing or not. And a job, I mean, even discipline or whatever, right?
Yes.
It's one of my biggest pet peeves. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think that we try and mold them into this thing, and some horses don't want to be that thing.
Oh, yeah. So the little mare that I'm riding right now that I call Willow, we bred her, and if you look, she's out of a full sister to Roxy, who obviously was the horse I did the bareback bridleless reining with, so she was really good at reining. And her sire is the horse that I did the Titanic theme freestyle with and won the Congress, so both of these are highly bred reining horses on both sides. I haven't shown her in reining yet because I could see that she is very intense and she tries almost too hard. Mm. And because of that, I have found that Western dressage is a better fit. So exactly to what you were just saying, somebody could look at it and be like, oh, she failed out of whatever. Well, first of all, I haven't even tried it yet because I could see that she needed a different path. And what's interesting is I truly believe, and she's 8 now, and it doesn't bother me a lick that she hasn't been shown in reining yet. And I still am not even going to answer, but give me until she's 10, 11, 12, and we'll just keep seeing what else she can do. I earned my bronze medal in traditional dressage on her this spring, my reining pony.
Whereas somebody else would have taken her and pushed her to the point where she probably would have broken down, either mentally or physically.
Yeah, mentally on this one, mentally is where this one's going to go. Like she just gets a little more, it's kind of funny because she's just very intense and she tries so hard, but that can also be a problem. But yeah, I love it and it doesn't matter to me. That's one of the reasons why I look like I'm all over the place is because if you're actually looking for what the horse excels at, that actually means you're probably going to be switching around because they're not all going to excel at one set discipline.
So, Stacey, we're going to take some callers now. And first up, we have Kim from Indianapolis, and she wants to talk about her reining horse. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So when did you get this reining horse?
I got her a year ago, August.
Okay, and how old?
So I've had her just a little over a year. She is 13.
And what's her name?
Chica.
I like that, Chica. So what do you need Kim's help with when it comes to Chica? Is she being cheeky? I couldn't resist. It was there. I had to take it.
No.
You gave me that one. I had to do
it. No. No, I bought her because I wanted to. I've been riding for a while. I'm an intermediate rider. I really wanted to try to do some Indiana Ranch Horse Association shows. I'm new at showing, but I bought her because I thought she had a good handle on her. She'd be a good project for that. And so we take a lot of lessons, and we went to our first show in May, and it was pretty rough. But I've continued to plug along because I really want to do this. We had a show this past weekend, and we've made huge progress. I'm so excited, but we still have a long ways to go, but we've made big progress. I actually placed in the class this past weekend, which I was really surprised. But I go by to the shows a lot of times by myself because my riding instructor is a reiner, and so a lot of times she's not going to the same shows that I'm going to. So I'm struggling with exactly how much and how to prepare her before I go into the class.
Boy, Stacy, that is true of every discipline. We've gotten that question for every discipline everybody rides in. Jumping, dressage.
Oh, really?
How much do you work them before the show? Yeah.
Yeah. Because she has a tendency to be a little anxious, and I'm sure a lot of that is me. but I'm getting less anxious the more I do this. And so I'm thinking that might be part of the reason why she's improving. But this past weekend, the thing that we got docked on was, you know, she doesn't want to stand still in between the maneuvers. She gets a little antsy, and she was a little chargy on the lope departures, which that could mm-hmm. be very well be me too. But when I'm getting ready to prepare her to go in, you know, I don't want to get her too jazzed up, you know, because it's not raining anymore. I'm doing the horsemanship, ranchmanship, trail, and ranch riding classes. Mm-hmm. But I also need her with me, you know, so she's going to listen. So I'm just a little perplexed about, am I not doing enough? Am I doing too much? It just kind of was curious what your insight would be on that.
Okay. Well, first, celebrate that you are making progress. It sounds like you are headed.
Yes, I am so excited.
A good direction. Yeah, I think sometimes we forget to celebrate those things. I know I do that myself. I'll be like, and next, and next, and next. And sometimes I have to either, a lot of times I tell people, and I find people tend to do it more if they are showing, but I think it works showing or not showing. And that is to take a video, beginning of the season, beginning of the month, anything, just take a video and then do it again in another month and do it again at the end of the summer, because you have video footage, not just your emotions and your feelings. And I think it's easier for people sometimes, it shows because it's more natural, be like, hey, will you videotape my class? But realistically, you can do that at home and still measure the same progress the same way. And then you can kind of get a impartial viewing of yourself eating popcorn one night and watching like videos from several times over the year. And so I would highly recommend you do that, because you'll see the progress and it you can absorb it more in that slightly impartial. But for sure, it sounds like some of the questions
I
you
did
have
get
around
me. I did get. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good.
I did get somebody to videotape me this past weekend.
Very good.
And somebody did videotape me at the first show.
Yay.
And I was amazed at the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on to those, because over the next few years, yeah, you'll get to continue to see that. So I just wish I had videos from back when I was showing, when I was 15. Like, that would have been fun. But when some of the things that you said you're having issues with, for example, the standing mm-hmm. still, do you have a cue that you've trained her for standing still?
Well, I try to put my hand down mm-hmm. on her neck, and I do kind of, you know, bump her a little bit to get her to put her head down. But mm-hmm. I'm probably not as consistent with that as I need to be.
Okay. So I did make, and maybe we can put it in the show notes, but I made a video that shows my standstill cue, and it's out there on YouTube. But when I actually teach my horses a standstill cue. So the baby version of the standstill cue, like before I get on a colt, I will be able to bend their nose around to like near where my leg would be. And when you first do this with a young horse, they're going to walk around and they're going to move around. And then as soon as their feet freeze, because they're just kind of experimenting, I release the rein. So what happens is, I'm bending them and they figure out that when their feet stay still, I'm going to release that rein. So I actually have a cue mm-hmm. for them to stand still. Well, the advanced version of that, which we use on the show horses, is that I want to be able to collect them to a standstill. And the best way I can describe that to you is that if, let's say I was walking on the horse on a loose rein, and I wanted to make that a little bit more collected or gathered up walk, what I would do is I would mm-hmm. close my legs and my hands. And so even though we were walking, I would go from virtually no contact on either. I could close the doors and I could actually box that horse in and bring them into a more collected walk by giving them a hug with my legs. And let's just give that a number. Let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to hug them with a 3, and I'm going to also close my hands and fingers and hug their mouth with like a 3. And what's going to happen is we were walking, and then I
close both of those doors to a three, but we're still walking. So I didn't actually shift gears. If I wanted to shift gears, I would unbalance those two. So I would, maybe if I wanted to stop, maybe I would pick up with the reins with a three, but I wouldn't close my legs. So the legs would be a zero. And so if you can get that idea in your mind that you can collect a horse in motion with pressure, or you can actually use that as a standstill cue. So what my horses learn that we stop, and then I can actually hug them, and both with my legs and gather them up with the reins, and I can hug them. And when their feet freeze, so let's say you go to hug your mare and she's kind of dancing a little right, dancing a little left, and you can kind of, you can gently, and I'm not even going to have you really push her back and forth because I don't want to exaggerate it too much. Meaning, like if she wiggles, let's say a foot, you can have a little box a little bit, but if she, what I want you to think about is like, can I pick up with ones? Like, can I close my legs with a one and my hands with a one and have her just freeze for a second? Like, what does she want? And the second that she hesitates for that second, you're going to soften and release. And then you're going to work until you can shut all of those doors with like a three or a four. So in the video on YouTube, I had somebody videotape straight on, and you can actually see my legs moving and you can see the contact with my hands and my horse brought back to like vertical. And she's under about a five with both. And when you get to the point where the horse comprehends the pressure of five on both is not, it's if they're like, oh, this just means stand still. Then what happens is, let's say you're out trail riding, even though this is going to work in the show pen, let's say you're out trail riding and somebody just takes off on their horse. What just happened there is the energy in the room just went from walking along at a one, it just skyrocketed up to an eight or nine. You have to be able to have aids that can answer whatever level of anxiety is brought up around you. And that's why it's important sometimes not to just stand still and release. Because I remember growing up, I used to have a barrel horse, and my standstill cue was let go of everything, like take my legs, brace my legs off, don't touch the reins. But it didn't work because she was electrified by that. With this hug, you're kind of, it's actually more of a desensitizing kind of a thing. You're hugging them and saying, like, be here. Well, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does make sense. And I love it that you gave me that example, because she's also not been trail ridden before. The previous owner said, oh, you know, she won't be very good at that. But I love to trail ride. So I've been taking her on a couple little trail rides, and she's done great. But that's been kind of my concern. Okay, what am I going to do if, like, some deer jumps out?
And she Kim, we all worry about that. I drive carriage, and I'm always terrified of what's going to happen when a deer runs out in front of my pony. I think that's a common one. Kim, we have to run. We have more callers to get to, but I appreciate you calling in.
Okay.
Thanks a bunch.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I know that day's coming, and I know it's not going to end well. So I do have another question that was submitted here for you, Stacy, and I love this one because we all do it. Jenny sent this one in. I've developed a bad habit of closing my eyes whenever my horse spooks. Okay, well, you and everybody else in the world. It could be while leading or riding. My anxiety sometimes gets the best of me, and I've learned how to address it, but I still close my eyes. Any suggestions? See, me when driving, my pony, I have a Hackney pony, and he, when we first got him, didn't know anything. So we had to teach him how to drive. Well, bolting became his thing. Anytime he'd hear something he didn't like, we got him half blinkers instead of full blinkers, and that helped a little. But you know, I got to tell you, Jenny, when he bolted, I'd keep my eyes open until he about hit something. And then they got close. And then I was like, I don't want to see. I just don't want to see. Isn't that human nature?
Yeah. Now you're making me have flashbacks. So the first thing when I heard the question, the first thing that came into my mind was I was learning to do mounted shooting. And I really hadn't been around guns very much. I mean, BB guns growing up, and now I'm shooting black powder. So the good news is it you know, it burns out after, you know, 20, 30 feet, depending on what it's loaded with. But it's basically just going to pop a balloon. But they kept trying to figure out why I wasn't very accurate. And at one of the practices, they started cracking up. They're like, you shut your eyes every time you shoot. And I'm like, that's probably not helpful, is it? And so... And so the cure for that was we put sunglasses on me, and instantly it was cured. But
Oh, was it the flash itself that was?
You know, the mounted shooting is fascinating because I call it from the horse's point of view. It's like you've got the flash, you've got the noise, and you've got the disappearing balloon act. Because it's there and then it's gone.
And the balloon pops. There's
the
two
balloon pops
in this,
and it's gone.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, it's just, but for me, I think it was that noise. I think it's exactly what Jenny's talking about here, which is like, so I am a little more naturally wound kind of a person. I'm more naturally reactive. You do not want to take me to a Halloween haunted house for the safety of the people that are acting. I will fight back. So because I know this about myself in
that's
other areas.
That's something that probably not a lot of people know about you, though.
Oh, yeah. Horses are my therapy in many ways. But yeah, for sure. Like I'm definitely wound a little bit tight. I'm actually going for acupuncture after we're done with this call.
She knew she was going to be dealing with me for 2 hours. It's like, I got to be bad.
Which is something I've started exploring this year because I'm like, really, I need to figure out how to let go of some tension. And so, but yeah, this closing your eyes habit, I would actually be interested for you to ask yourself this question, where else in my life do I have this type of reaction? Because I find that a lot of times if you can track down these things that are going on with you and your horse, I mean, 99. Whatever percent of the time, they're going to have a crossover somewhere else. So for example, like I'm jumpy in my house. I'm jumpy. Like I'm that more jumpy kind of in different places like that. I should know this about myself. And so this is that self-awareness key that actually is what makes me better with the horses, because it's not that I'm going to cure some of this in me. It's that I'm aware of it. And then I handle it different and I don't make it a problem. And that way I can give this grace to myself while I'm working on it. And then that's going to naturally carry through to the horses too.
So it'd be interesting to see if a person like this also closes their eyes on the hills and roller coasters.
Oh, I guarantee I do. If you could get me on a roller coaster. Good luck with that. Like,
but that's a tough one to overcome because it is natural. Number one, you have to really think about not doing it. Mm-hmm. And your horse doesn't announce when they're going to spook usually. So it's not like you can say, okay, when they do it right now, I'm going to keep my eyes open. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In replacement therapy for that, one thing I would do is, so when my horses spook, I have actually kind of hardwired answers into my own body, even beyond my brain. So like when I went to do something like Road to the Horse, and you're doing something like colt starting, and your odds during colt starting of having things go quote unquote wrong, it's nothing's established yet. So basically what has to happen is maybe the same thing happens when somebody's learning to drive a race car. They basically just learn these automatic reflex habits of like, when this happens, I'm going to do this. And so I didn't have that during the mounted shooting, but if a horse spooks, I know like when I'm riding, I know I'm going to take their head around either left or right. And literally while I'm riding, I know at any moment you could yell left or right. And I could immediately yell back which one would be my immediate answer. And it's going to be due to I'm already traveling, tracking left. So there's already a little bend. So if this horse were to spook, my answers are already pre-structured. And I've done them for so many years that they go past that, like, there's levels of competency. There's, you know, the unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, consciously competent, and then unconsciously competent. And everybody wants to get to the higher levels where you're like, hey, at least consciously competent, like I can do it when I want to do it. Or like with a lot of my reining, or what I'm saying with this colt starting stuff, it's unconsciously competent. It literally means when my horse spooks, my body already is going to bring the head around. It's going to shift my weight. It's going to put my leg. It's going to do all of this immediately, just like when you're driving your car and somebody pulls out, you don't have to think anymore of how you're going to brake and how you're going to steer and how you're going to have that reaction. So I find that as you train your body like that, one of those things you'll find that during that is you're going to get so much more awareness that your eyes are probably going to stay open more of the time because you've got a string of things you're doing.
Yeah, and that also becomes muscle memory at that point when you're getting into conscious competence. It's definitely muscle memory at that point. Well, very good. Well, let's take a commercial break here real quick, and then we'll head over to a segment that we're going to be doing on the show.
I would again like to thank Equithrive for sponsoring this podcast. If you're listening the week that this episode airs, I am in Oklahoma with my horses at the Western Dressage World Show. I've been documenting my progress with Willow and Gabby all year through YouTube videos, and now it's finally here, the Western Dressage World Show. One of the things that I packed into my trailer before leaving home was my Equithrive pelleted electrolytes. It's going to be in the 80s, upper 80s, while I am down there showing the horses. If you'd like to learn more about Equithrive and the products that I'm using, you can visit equithrive.com. If you decide to purchase something, use the word Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, in the checkout to receive 10% off plus free shipping. In this week's segment, On Call with Dr. Monty, sponsored by Equithrive, Dr. Monty and I discuss electrolytes and dealing with the heat. Dr. Monty McInturf is located in Tennessee and operates the Tennessee Equine Hospital that has three locations. He's been an equine practitioner for over 30 years with a focus on the equine athlete. Here's my discussion with Dr. Monty.
Dr. Monty, here is a question. It is hot here right now. And when we're working the horses and it's really hot, I've got two questions kind of hovering around here. What signs should we be watching for stress? And is that plain white salt block sitting in the corner of the stall enough?
Those are super questions. Electrolytes is what you're talking about with the salt. And there's all kinds of electrolytes on the market, and they're very, very important for the horse's cardiovascular system, which helps to cool the horse and helps to oxygenate the horse. So the salt block really does matter. White salt actually may not quite be enough. There's a lot of different types of electrolytes out there. So when it's really, really hot, I encourage you to put a hot electrolyte supplement into the feed so that we know our horse is taking it in. Some horses are really great salt eaters and they're great water drinkers. Some aren't. So if we actually take an electrolyte pack and put it a scoop into our feed, that's much like them going to the salt block. So I just want to throw that out to be careful. Some horses don't take enough salt in. And if you don't take enough salt in, that tends to help you fatigue more quickly. Your muscles need potassium. It needs chloride. It needs sodium to kind of help the cells recover while they're working. So it's very, very important. Heat is another big thing. If it's actually too hot outside for you and you feel like the humidity is making you struggle and the heat is giving you a little bit of a headache, it's probably not a good time to be riding your horse. Horses like shade. They like fans just like you and I do. So pick the time of day you ride. If it's really, really hot, start early and ride in the morning or wait until the cool of the evening or especially a shaded area. But the way horses deal with heat is through their sweating mechanism and through their respiration. A horse that is overheating quickly is probably a horse that's not sweating quickly. So, in really extreme competitions when it's super hot, we have cooling stations along the way in some of our endurance rides, some of our steeplechase races, some of our polo games. We'll have cooling areas so when the horse comes out of competition, we can cool him down quickly. Another trick is to take a bag of ice, like in a little baggie, and place it on the jugular vein because cooling the blood flow helps to cool the body. So instead of just putting ice on a horse's back or water on their back, take a little bag of ice and put it right on the jugular vein. You can cool a horse down quickly. It's a really neat trick in competition. Yeah.
I have never heard that, and I'm going to totally try that. That would be fun.
Yeah, you'll like it. The horse likes it, too. And you'll know when the horse is panting and he's sweating and he feels warm to the touch and you want him cooling down quickly. Another way is to take alcohol and place alcohol on his back, that'll cool him quickly. But, you know, water and ice are something we have in our, you know, our coolers, and it's easy to grab. And ice on the jugular is a great, great trick.
Okay, that's awesome. Now, one thing I've heard is that if you do hose them off, you know, if you hose them off and you stop hosing them off, you should scrape them because you don't want the heavy layer of water on them. You know, you want to help it evaporate. Is there truth to that? Or, you know,
what happens, the water heats up on their body, right? And so drying them off is going to help them cool, most definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so you scrape that water off.
Yeah, scrape that water off. Yeah, that's good. I didn't think to say that. That's perfect.
Yeah, I get a question about it sometimes, and I'm like, well, I think this is right. This is what I remember from somewhere. So I love that. I love that I can double check this with you. That's awesome.
No, that's good.
I'm going to definitely be trying the ice on the jugular, though. I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing my horse's response. We just installed some big, they're actually made for like cooling cattle, these huge fans. And it was so funny because the horses look like they're striking poses like models because it's flipping their manes and they've got this very dramatic hair flying around look, but they're super happy with their fans.
Oh yeah. So, well, just think about it. If you love it, they love it. Yeah. A good misting fan when I'm hot. Hey, give me more.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
Thank you.
Hi, Diane. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sorry about the wait. So tell us about your horse.
No,
it's so funny because the note from the producer says, how to tell if an issue is a pain or not. Well, does it hurt? There, Diane. Thanks a bunch.
Right?
I'm glad I could help.
Thank you. Well, I have a 13-year-old gelding quarter horse, and he has been pretty spoiled, and in a good way, not even a terrible training way, but he's never been off the property that he's on. And so he's never been done anything but kind of ridden around in the pastures. And I came into his life a couple years ago, but haven't really worked with him until recently. And so jumped on him, went to go right around the pasture, and we had a rodeo on our hands. And I went, okay. So luckily I wasn't bucked off, and luckily I didn't get hurt. He didn't get hurt that I knew of. And he calmed down, and I walked, you know, I stayed on. Thank you, Lord.
You made it the 8 seconds. Yay!
Well,
I wish I had the buzzer. I would play it right now. I don't have it.
At 61, I don't think that was too shabby. So I climbed off and took a look at him to kind of think, what the heck, you know, happened out there? And here's these two big horse flies on his chest. So we had ridden out of the pasture, these two horse flies still eating at his chest, and he did pretty okay, which that was so horrible, but it was like, okay, is that what did it? So I started watching him around him, and he looked like he was short striding in the front, and I was like, so we got some other issues going on. So we have the world's greatest vet, and he came out, him and his partner, and they came out and checked him out, and I said, see, I think he's short striding in the front on that left. And he goes, oh, no, he's short striding on both of them in the front. And I said, oh, okay. So we put shoes on per our vet. And so, but in my head, I'm still going, but is he in pain? You know, is he short striding because he's in pain? Should I be riding him? He should be fine. But I don't know how to read him well enough to know if he's just being ornery, because he can be, or he's got something really going on in there.
Well, I'm super glad that you went to the vet first, because that's excellent, because, you know, I'm on the phone and not there, and you're saying that you can't quite tell.
Right.
But I will tell you what I do if I'm in a similar situation, and it fits with basically what I'll do is almost a rehab type protocol, which means I'm going to go slow and steady. So even if you had a horse, like I've rehabbed a lot of different horses from suspensory injuries or different things that happen that are sports related, or even some horses that just come straight in and they have like a developmental issue that they have, like a bone developmental issue, like OCD, and they have surgery before they're ever ridden. So they were just born that way. And then I've had the job of rehabbing them and getting them started again. And what you'll find is that a lot of the vet protocols, and this might be something that you can even talk to your vet about. A lot of the vet protocols are, they're just slow and steady, which is kind of interesting because that's also just a technique you can use in regular training. And it's also a technique you can use in rehabbing. So for example, you do 15 minutes a day for 2 weeks at a walk, and then you do, you know, and then you move it up. So like seems like they always are in these like 2 week increments that the vets tend to, and then they're like, okay, now you're going to do, you know, 10 minutes at a walk and 5 minutes at a trot for 2 weeks. And so there's this very slow and steady. So the way that I look at it, and I would encourage you to talk to your vet about it, just be like, hey, you know, the shoes, whether or not they made a difference, you can give them some feedback and be like, I'm a little concerned, like, what would you recommend for a protocol? Over the years, I've seen these patterns. So I tend to go and be like, you know, I'm going to go slow and steady in a rehab kind of a way, because sometimes to be able to uncover the very question you're asking, like how much of this is behavioral, how much of this is physical, you have to do some, but slow and steady. So I go right back to groundwork, because groundwork takes away a lot of the added issues that you could get with, well, bucking and different things, but it also takes away, you know, if it's whether it's a saddle problem or whether it's a, you know, a training problem or whatever, you go back down to groundwork and you can see it. There's that kind of disconnect physically between your body, their body. And you can be like, geez, he really looks like he has a lot of attitude there. And you can do the other thing you just did and watch him out in the pasture and try to, because a lame horse is going to look lame in multiple places. You can start to be like, oh, wait, he is sore on this footing, but he's not sore on that footing. And it's, then you'll have more information to take to your vet and go, geez, he seems really oddly sound on hard ground, but lamer on soft ground, versus being more sound on soft ground and lamer on hard ground. They actually are two opposite diagnoses. Like a horse that's sound on hard ground is a different diagnosis than one that's sound on soft. It's fascinating. So gather information slow and steady.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. I sound like a 15-year-old, but I'm a huge fan, and thank you so very, very much.
Thanks, Diane.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Well, it's always fun to have callers on the show. And again, we'll announce that time that you can call in for the next episode next month. Christina has a question, though. She says, her question is on steering and shoulder control. I am learning new levels of training all the time, and with each new level, I realize how little I do know. Well, that comes back to the levels of learning we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't really even know where to begin or how to go about starting to fix it. It's true of anything we do in life. I knew something was very wrong with my steering, but I couldn't pinpoint it until I saw it in one of your videos, that steering is not about guiding the nose, but about guiding the shoulders. My horse doesn't follow his nose. He will bend his head and his neck around, but still will go over wherever he wants to. And I don't know how to fix this.
Well, Christina, I've actually dealt with an entire season of this type of stuff on my podcast, where I've been going over kind of piece by piece the horse's body. And of course, all of these different things are tied together: your mind, your body, your horse's mind, your horse's body. But specifically when we're talking about, you know, improving the horse's steering, or getting the horses, sometimes people will call it connecting their feet to the rein. So that literally means don't actually tie those to those. Don't actually tie the reins to the feet. I should phrase that differently. So, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to influence the horse's feet. And so what you're saying right now is that, for example, one of the examples I use all the time is if you're riding back towards the barn and you decide you want to turn around and go back because you just realize you dropped something back up the trail a little ways. If you can bring your horse's head around and they're still headed to the barn because the shoulders are still headed to the barn, but they will bend their head all the way around, but their shoulders are still headed to the barn, you for sure at that moment know that you've got something very wrong with your steering, and that's what you're describing. Now, the good news is that most of the time, we deal with this just in various degrees. So if you're riding, like I'm practicing Western dressage with my horses right now, and I can feel the horse's shoulder leak out a little bit, and what I mean by that is that I might be turning the horse to the left and I can feel that shoulder go a little further to the right than what I intended it to. So I'm just dealing with a very small version of what you're dealing with in a much bigger version. And at the end of the day, when we look at it, we need to figure out what's motivating the horse and why the horse would search to do something different. So a lot of times when the horses are really bending their head and neck around a lot and their feet are still headed somewhere else, they're confessing that in their mind, they haven't locked this idea together that when you pull on the left rein, if the left foot comes to the left, you're going to release on that left rein, even if you just release for a moment. And then if you want to turn more, you can pick up again and you can ask that foot to come a little bit to the left, those shoulders to come to the left. And then when that shoulder comes, you're going to release a little bit. And a way you can look at this is you can look at it like you're paying the horse. So every time you ask the horse to take that step, you need to reward that horse for moving in the right direction. So you need to pay the horse by releasing or rewarding. So the good news is, if you're not quite sure how this happened, the fix is still the same, whether you really understand how it came about. And that is that you need to be in a safe environment, somewhere that if the horse's steering is funny, like, so you're riding around in an arena or a round pen, and you need to get more focused on the shoulders are headed in a direction towards a post that you can see straight ahead of you on the round pen, and you're going to pick up and you're going to feel that shoulder move to the left. You're going to realize you're no longer aimed at that post, but now you're aimed to the left of that post on the round pen, and you're going to soften up a release, and you're going to do a lot of that to reconnect the steering.
Well, we have a guest coming up, but we're going to get to more callers and to more questions here in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to speak to Jenny. Now, tell us who Jenny is.
She's my coffee buddy.
That's right. You told me that. You said, I'm having her on because we have coffee.
We have coffee and tea, and we have amazing conversations. And I think you'll get an idea why when we talk to her. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm great, Stacy. How are you doing?
Good. So I was trying to tell Glenn what it is that you do. And basically I was like, she goes to coffee with me and we talk a lot and it's really fun. But I think there's a more professional way to introduce what you do. So could you share what you do with Glenn aside from coffee and tea?
Yeah, great. Well, we also have some really great discussions on how to grow our businesses. So we do make a lot of productive conversations in our coffee and tea meetings. So, but yeah, so I partner with horses to help leaders have clarity in how they communicate their vision to their teams. And I also work a lot with teams to help them learn how to understand each other better to reduce conflict.
I really enjoy it because of the horse aspect. So it was nice because Jenny asked if she could come and use my facility for one of her sessions. And I was able to literally sit in the rafters because I built my hayloft up into the rafters. And I sat up above everybody in this like crow's nest kind of a version and watched the work being done and thought, this is a beautiful illustration of the thought process that goes in. And one thing that I've been trying to get more clear on when I've been talking to people in my podcast is I kind of made this four square model, and I talk about addressing all four, which is the horse's mind and the horse's body, the rider's mind and the rider's body. And so I think what Jenny does really well is addressing a lot of the stuff that goes on in the rider's mind and how that works. Well, that's what we talk about at our coffee tea meetings. But in hers, she's talking about leadership, and she gets to use horses as an illustration. So, of course, it's perfect.
The horses really bring such a powerful aspect to helping people realize the way that their thought processes impact what they're doing and how they're doing it. And so being able to bring people in who have been through all kinds of leadership courses and read all kinds of books and have gone on team building things where, you know, they go out and play miniature golf together or do different types of things to sort of build some sense of relationship. The horses provide the opportunity to really take all of that and really put it into action for people to see, how am I showing up when I come in with my team? And what are the things that I might be thinking or doing that are keeping me as a leader from being able to move forward, or for a team working together, really learning how to understand everybody brings different strengths and what do those look like. And so I love being able to put people out with the horses so they have that opportunity to really see these things in action that, that they read about or listen to in a classroom session. And people just walk away, their minds are just blown at how much they learn about themselves and how to really work well together as opposed to working in silos.
Yeah. So I think, Jenny, is it possible that we can try to maybe explain, because I know that when you were explaining it to me the first time, it wasn't really till I saw it that I was like, yeah. Oh, I really get it. So can we explain a little bit, for example, how a group of however many, I forget how many exactly, people were trying to move like the miniature horse into the box, which of course I love right. miniature horses. So this was like my favorite little equine of the whole thing. And can you run through like some of the different things that might come up leadership wise as they're trying to follow your rules about how to move the horses and what they can and can't do, and kind of some of those things that you see come up in the arena with the horse that you then unpack later?
Yeah, so it is hard sometimes for people to kind of get a visual of what I'm talking about when I'm describing what I do. So just to give people an idea, if you can picture a horse out in the arena and a box made of four poles raised up off the ground about, you know, maybe 6 to 8 inches on some jump blocks, and one or multiple horses that are at liberty, so they're just loose out in the arena. And the task for a group of people that would be out there, and let's say there's about 8 people, that's really a good group size to be working with one horse. And so I will give that group of people the task to go out and move the horse from wherever the horse is in the arena and try to get that horse into the box. And so there's a few parameters that we put on them because we want to challenge people to have to really think creatively and innovatively. And so I may give them the parameters of you cannot touch the horse and you're not allowed to talk, but I will give you 2 minutes to plan on how you're going to move this horse from wherever they are in the arena into the box. Now, again, remember, there's no touching of the horse. So people immediately kind of limiting beliefs start to come up for people because they've never seen anything done like this where they've moved a horse without touching them, because we traditionally move horses by putting a lead rope on
yeah,
their
halter. Yeah, I was just
going to
say, I got my lead rope and my halter, Jenny. I'm good. I got them moved
right?
in 2 minutes.
Yeah. And so the moment I put those parameters on you, you start having some thoughts coming into your mind of whether or not this can or can't be done. You start trying to figure out how to make it happen. And everyone starts kind of thinking, what if we don't succeed and how's that going to reflect? And all kinds of things start to come into people's minds. And that's exactly what I want to happen. Because that's what's going to help people have to stop. Maybe they have to regroup at some point in time. But they'll go into a planning stage. And again, if I give them just 2 minutes to plan, they've got to figure out how they're going to do this, who's going to do what. And so when they start planning is when I really start to see a lot of team dynamics coming up. I'll start to see people who are executors. They just want to get out there and get it done. People who are strategic planners want to spend a lot of time planning how they're going to move the horse. People who have really strong relationship strengths want to go out and build relationship with the horse. And so the horse will come into the box. So you really start seeing these dynamics, and then they just show up when people go out to work on moving the horse into the box. And, you know, from a horse perspective, right, you have this group of people, their energy starts coming out at the horse. And depending on that energy from the group of people, how they're approaching the horse may move, the horse may not move, the horse may move quickly. And so there's this process where they have to really start reading the language of the horse. Now, just to kind of, you know, set a little bit of information is that I do give people some safety information prior to them going out with the horses. And I talk to them just a little bit about how the horse thinks and how they see the world and experience the world as prey animals. And so people have some very general information about, you know, how to move the horse or what to look for if the horse is uncomfortable. The safety is always my primary thing. But they go out and they just get to try all these different ways to move the horse. And what they ultimately realize, because when they go out, they're first real focused on the task. And I think that's a lot of what happens when people go out to ride their horses. You know, they want to get this task done with their horse. And what people realize when they're out trying to move a horse without touching them and not being able to talk to each other is how important building relationship is. And, you know, leadership philosophies all around talk about the importance of leadership is about building relationships. You can influence other people to do the things that you need them to do. And, but yet we try to teach leadership skills through a PowerPoint presentation. And so when people go out to, you know, work with the horses to get the horses to move to the box or through an obstacle course or things like that, they really have to learn, how do I build a relationship with this being that thinks completely differently than I do? Because we're coming at it from a predatory standpoint in general. And, you know, the horse just sees the world differently. And so, you know, people really are challenged with what their belief systems are around how do you accomplish the tasks that you need done. And so the conversations after that, we come back, we do a debrief. Whether they get the horse in the box or not is not the goal. It's really about how does the process happen. And so in our debrief, we have this conversation just around, you know, what happened out there with the horse, why the horse may have done what they did, moving where they did or not moving. And then I make a parallel. And this is the real key to this type of work, is being able to parallel what they experienced with the horse into their own environment. So if I have a team of people from a company, you know, I'm going to make a parallel of, well, where else does this happen? You know, that a situation where, let's say that the horse represents a client and you're a group of salespeople, you're trying to get that client in the box, right, to make a sale. And if the horse keeps moving away when you're approaching, then I'm going to make a parallel of, where else does that happen, that when your team is approaching a client, the client keeps moving away? And that's where the ahas start to happen and people start to go, oh, wow, yeah, you know, that's something that's been happening for us. And then I can start to explore the underlying things of why they think that the client might be moving away. And as they start exploring those things, they start realizing, hey, you know, maybe we aren't on the same page as a sales team in communicating who's going to approach the client, who's going to actually, you know, get the client moving forward, because there's a lot of different roles in there for a sales team to bring a client on board. And so as I walk them through that process, then I can get them to what we call a transformation piece, where I then can say, now that you have this information that your team needs to do A, B, and C, how are you going to use that when you go back to work tomorrow with your clients? And now they start saying, you know what, we need to make sure that this department and this department are really clear on who's going to approach the client to build the relationship, who's going to make sure the client has the information they need to know how to come and engage in our company. And so I can take them through this one exercise with the horse very often from them kind of thinking that the clients aren't coming in because they don't have the right website or they don't have the right marketing materials or something, when in reality, the clients aren't coming in because there's a lot of pressure being put on them or the team of salespeople aren't coordinated in who's doing what. And it's so powerful because people now walk away and say, now we know what we need to do. And it's great because then I get to follow up with them later and hear how they're implementing that.
Jenny, you mean showing up to these sales meetings with the lunge whip wasn't a good idea? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, I guess it depends. There's probably some clients that might need that kind of pressure. But yeah, certainly it's pretty eye-opening for people. And I have a lot of horse people that come in through my programs because, you know, in their organizations. And they have some pretty pretty powerful experiences themselves in seeing the horses differently.
Yeah, and I don't know. I love that at our coffee tea outings, we are able to draw the parallels. Like for me, I'm headed out to the Western Dressage World Show, and all of this stuff, this is like one giant team building exercise. The challenge right. for me, how much do I do? How do I prepare? I want to do well. Do I practice? Where's the line of the pressure being too much? Where do I lose the fun? You know, how do I keep it fun and yet work diligently? And so to me, the parallels of what you do with people for business and kind of life awareness, I see it at work every day that I'm out with the horses and teaching clinics and teaching people about horses. But personally myself being out there, because I want to see growth and I want to see movement, but I don't want to get so task oriented that there is damage to the relationship, because that was the main point. So
right.
I love it. We're going to have you back on again for some more really targeted, like, for example, how you would coach somebody like me headed to a show, or how we could use mm-hmm. this in some other ways. Because as you well know, our coffee talks can generally go on for 2+ hours. So
yes,
we can
yes, we
probably
do
find
always
another.
Have to block out a lot of time.
Do you have a website? Is there a website?
I do. Yeah. My website is thecollaborationpartners.com.
Thecollaborationpartners.com. We'll put a link to that in the show notes mm-hmm. as well for today's
Great.
Episode. Thank you, Jenny.
Great. Yeah,
thank
thanks
you.
So much, you guys. I appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we have one more caller to go to. Let's take that now.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Tom, who's from Michigan. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So, Tom, you have a 5-month-old colt, right? You got a little one.
Yeah. He's little, but he's getting bigger all the time and getting a little scary at this point. I don't know why he bites all the time. It's kind of funny in a way, but he just bites all the time. And he strikes out and gets up and strikes out at me and his mother. Doesn't matter who it is. And I've done everything right that I know of. You know, I imprinted from the beginning before he even stood up. I lunge him every day. I work with him, groom him, take him out in the trails. And once he's worked up, gotten a little exercise, he's a little better, but I don't know if it's going to get any better until he's gelded, which is scheduled for next week. So maybe that's the only solution.
Well, yay. I think you'll probably, you know, it sounds like you're on the right track with that. That's my opinion with a lot of them is I geld them fairly early, especially if anything, you know, if they're being like that and I suspect anything. At five months, it's interesting because one of my thoughts is that when you're handling him, there's a couple different things that come to mind. Is he in a bigger group of horses or is it just him and his mom? How is he with the other horses?
It's just him and his mom. There was another horse in the beginning, but it's just him and his mom now.
Yeah. Okay. And so is she tolerating quite a bit from him then?
Yeah, she's very good about it. I wouldn't tolerate that much.
Yeah. When we raised our different foals, it's fun when they're in a big group because some of the mothers are really, really tolerant and they allow a lot of this behavior, and then others wouldn't be as tolerant and you see a lot of it reflected in the foals. But what was nice is if they were out in a big group, then, you know, some of the other horses were doing some of the other training. And so there's two different ways I end up looking at this. Number one, I'm looking and I'm going like, oh, well, his mom's kind of allowing this to happen and he's just testing his boundaries. And, you know, you'll get that with mares and you'll get that with colts and fillies when they're young. And so it may or may not be related to that. A big training part of it would be that he wants to know where his boundaries are. And if she's letting him really push and do a lot, you've got to make sure that you set up the rules that you want. And one of the things with young horses that I try to encourage people to do is, for example, one of my favorite training tools is like the stick and string. And that stick and string, it's about 4 feet long. So if I've got one that's acting like this, I require him to stay 4 feet away from me. Like, so stand.
That's exactly what I do.
Good. good. And so, and then, you know, and I require him to be out of my space so that that biting isn't so much of an option. You know, I personally kind of cheat, and I put them out in the pasture with my old gelding and some of the other horses. And I just had a 2-year-old filly come in, and she was very, being very dominant and pushy to horses and humans, but she had also been out in the pasture with an older, slightly crippled, retired thoroughbred and another really smaller pony. And they were both letting her push him around. And when this one came in, it was like, okay, she's just being a handful and we're going to deal with it when we deal with it. But I just called the owner and said, do you care if I put her out in the paddock with these two horses? And the owner said, fine. And a huge chunk of my training is literally done by the horses in the pasture that are like, no,
right,
run me over. There's going to be a consequence if you run me over. And so, I'm not sure what your different options are there, but he's going to continue to ask these questions until he gets answers. And
right.
So
there is a limit with the mare. She won't let him go too far. You know, she does stop him at a certain point. And when I take him out in the back on a trail ride, he's running free. He'll start coming at me. And I'll take the stick with me, you know, and to keep his distance away from me, out of my space. But he's getting better. It's just, I don't know why it's taking so long.
I think after those little babies are cut off, you're going to have a better horse, too.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
We usually do.
They have so much energy.
They usually don't get
so
worse.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that would be rare.
Yeah.
You'll have to call back if that happens, because that'll be interesting.
Okay.
Well, thank you a bunch, Tom. We appreciate you calling, and good luck with the little one.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your time. Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about Equithrive and the products that I'm using, you can visit equithrive.com. If you decide to purchase something, use the word Stacy, STACY, in the checkout to receive 10% off plus free shipping.
So, Stacy, we have time for one more question that came in from one of your fans, and it is from Travis, who says, good morning. About a month ago on a podcast, you mentioned that you don't yield hindquarters on your horses, which I get from your explanation. My question is, how do you correct the problem that I have caused by yielding a horse too much? She's very front and heavy now, and we are trying to learn to sit back on our hocks for spins and rollbacks. Please advise. Thanks for all of your great information.
Very
well,
good.
Well, Travis, you didn't get any yet, so just kidding. Go ahead.
Yes, in episode 40 of my podcast, I talked about why I don't disengage my horse's hips. And, you know, I think it's got a lot of information, but it's also a really big topic. And so your follow-up question, I'm going to go a little bit deeper into it, saying that one of the reasons I don't disengage a lot, and I go over in that podcast the difference in my mind between the disengaging versus yielding. So I will yield a hindquarter, but I don't disengage. And so the difference is we can call that hindquarter underneath and we can actually ask for more engagement. But when we teach the horse to disengage, and I like that you phrased it too much and now your horse is front end heavy, we know that we've done too much when the horse's first thought is to get real heavy on the front end and start kicking the hips around. And teaching a horse to disengage is pretty easy and quick to do. And so then sometimes you have to be careful how much you do something that comes a little bit easier like that, because then to turn around and ask the horse to sit back on the hocks and move the front end around, they're like, hey, can I do the easier one? And so they just kind of volunteer that a little bit more. So even if you want to keep a level of disengaging, and again, I clarify all of that in the other podcasts, if you want to keep a level of disengaging in there, the awareness that Travis is bringing up right now is huge. You just need to know when too much is happening, and you'll know, because the front end's going to get real heavy. So what do? You start to break it down from the horse's point of view, and you start to think, let's say you're trotting around in a circle to the left, and you are going to ask that horse to slow down and maybe turn a little bit to the left. If you ask that horse to slow down and they get heavy on the front end, you need to ask them to go forward and get engagement again, so they're actually slowing down
without getting that heavier weight on their front end. So this is like one tiny component of getting heavy on the front end and then disengaging the hip. So you can start to work on it there. When you start to get that slightly improved, you're also going to notice that if you've done too much disengaging, you're going to slow down. And let's say that they actually kind of keep their front end up a little bit more or at least level. Now, when you go to turn them to the left, do you feel that again aggravated? Do you feel like that horse is like, oh, I know the answer? And keep in mind, your horse is trying to please you with something that has worked in the past. So it's not trying to be bad or do something negative. It's literally trying to do something you trained. And so when that horse gets heavy again, you need to ask for more forward motion again. So eventually what's going to happen is right now, if your horse is legitimately thinking about basically a turn on the forehand and getting real heavy on the front end, your pivot point is in front, up in front of on the horse's front legs. You need to visualize or sit here and think about moving that pivot point all the way back to that horse's haunches. And one of the ways we're going to do that is by engaging those, which is literally going to come with transitions. Every time it starts to get heavy, we're going to do a transition up. Maybe that's up to a trot, and then maybe, or maybe that is up to a lope. It's going to be something that makes them engage. You need to restring together this idea. When I bring you to the left, you need to think about engaging and going forward. Because at the end of the day, a spin and a rollback, they actually contain a lot of forward motion. And so when I am turning my horses, when I bring them to the left, they feel like a coiled spring. And so they come around and they'll pivot over the hocks, but they are always have this thought of forward motion in their mind. And that's where I'd begin.
Very good. Well, we've run out of time for this episode, but you can find lots more, Stacy. Matter of fact, in much more detail, answering some of these questions on her podcast. And where do people go to find that?
Well, you can find links to it on my website, which is stacywestfall.com, where you can find blogs and videos, YouTube videos, and of course the podcast. And you can subscribe to the podcast in any major podcast player.
Yeah, just search for Stacy Westfall. I just did that as you were talking and it popped right up. It's right there. So you can find that there. Stacy, thank you so much for doing this with us. We really appreciate you being on. And I wanted to let everybody know that tomorrow the show's going to be out a little late. As you know, we're not live this week because we are traveling to the Thoroughbred Makeover in Lexington, Kentucky. And Jamie is competing, and her freestyle tomorrow, which she is terrified about, is at 11:30 in the morning. So we're going to actually record Horses in the Morning later in the day. So we can not only talk about her, but with her. So because she's so terrified of this. I don't know what she has planned, but she's terrified. So her and Baby Groot are going to be competing then on Thursday in eventing. So she's going from the freestyle, which she's never done one of in her life. And then she's going to go do eventing on Thursday with Baby Groot. So we'll see how this works out.
Exciting.
Well, you know, there's always stories. It's always good for stories.
Yes.
So we will have the shows. They will come out probably a little later than you're used to the rest of the week. We appreciate your patience and you hanging in there. And Stacy will be here the first Tuesday of every month. We will announce when the next call-in session is so that you too can call in and talk to her. Thanks, Stacy. StacyWestfall.com.